News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. A lot of chatter on the, it's not chatter, it's text. On the text line, for chatter, it'd be a phone call. 251-343-0106. Feel free to call me and Dalton during the 8 o'clock hour. Can I hit this real quick about this DOJ?
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about poultry plants during the pandemic.
Yes, and a lot of poultry plants happen to be in the South,
mm-hmm.
and happen to be like Alabama and Mississippi. I think Sanderson Farms is based out of Mississippi. They've got 17,000 workers. At Georgia as well. So anyway, the Justice Department filed a lawsuit Monday against some of the largest poultry producers in the U.S., along with a proposed settlement seeking to end what it claims have been longstanding deceptive and abusive practices for workers. It was filed in federal court in Maryland. Names Cargill, Sanderson Farms, Wayne Farms, along with a data consulting company. Now, this is the important pin right here. It's known as Weber, Meng, Saul and Company, and its president. Now, the lawsuit, the Justice Department alleges that the companies have been engaged in a multi-year conspiracy to exchange information about the wages and benefits for workers. So they were kind of with the help of the consulting firm, the data firm, they were able to kind of collusion or whatever.
Yeah.
They were able to set the market at this, so they weren't competing against each other. So the workers didn't have the upper hand in terms of trying to find better compensation in another place.
Right.
I think that's what it comes down to.
They were colluding to keep the wages low.
Exactly. So it may be affecting somebody. Well, maybe that somebody you know has been affected for years by this. Wayne Farms has more than 9,000 employees, and it makes products under brand names including Wayne Farms Fresh and Prepared Chicken, Platinum Harvest Premium Fresh Chicken. Laurel, Mississippi is that's where Sanderson Farms is, and that's right outside of Hattiesburg, I believe. It's got 17,000 employees and 12 plants. It processes 13.6 million chickens per week. So these companies are very busy at what they do. Their workers, I'm sure, work very hard under God knows what kind of conditions. And the DOJ says there's been something that more smells around here than what normally smells at a chicken plant. And so let's see what happens.
Yeah, I'd like to know what the true number of illegal workers they mm-hmm. have also, and maybe things have been cleaned up over the years, but you think of places like poultry farms or beef processing plants, and those are generally where at least back in the day you'd find illegal immigrants working. But I wonder if, you know, there's been a more concerted effort to stop that, or if there are more. But think about especially the first year and a half of the pandemic, and those were the places that a lot of folks were most worried about with COVID moving through.
And you know why? Because those were the places where you had immigrants were working there under those conditions, and then they were all living in the same trailer park or whatever. You know, they socialized together and they worked together in those plants, so they were ripe for those outbreaks. And I think there was one example in Iowa, and they had to close it down for a while.
Yeah,
but that was one of those places where, and I guess it's more common than we even know, as we just kind of lollygag along day to day. We're not exactly aware of what's going on at those plants, the working and living conditions.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the share of the market those big corporations you mentioned there, what percent of the market they all make up together. But I remember reading about the different plants that or companies that process, cow, the beef mm-hmm. For America. And they just a few companies hold a major, major portion of the actual output. I've kind of gone on this kick, and I know a lot of y'all were way ahead of me on this, and who knows how far down the road I'll get. But the small family farm thing and being able to produce on your own, even though I know it's so difficult to produce everything that a family consumes there in-house, it gets easier when you work as a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But regardless, this day and age, you pretty much have to go outside to buy. buy everything you need, but at least a little bit of self-sustenance I've kind of been looking into more and more. And I keep thinking about how with the formula situation.
Yeah, terrible.
And Abbott Labs, how insane is it that Abbott Labs played such a major role in the COVID response with their testing and some of the different products they were trying to put out there to, quote-unquote, fight COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're also the company that can bring the nation to its knees when one of their plants shuts down for baby formula. Not that there's necessarily anything wrong, I guess, with one company having so many different streams of revenue. But when a country puts all of their eggs, I guess, pun not intended in this poultry argument.
But you're right.
But when you bet everything on red and black hits, then you're in big trouble. And maybe diversify a little bit our streams of these different products that we get.
Yeah, we're finding out through the pandemic and through other, you know, I guess you would say, you know, problems like the Abbott Lab thing. It's like, who knew? Who knew that that was like our pretty much our one
company
producer of that baby formula? I didn't know that. And then again, it came to light as well through the pandemic that so few processors, I guess, are involved in the processing of a lot of what we consume.
Yeah. David says, and he reminds me here, the Porch Creek Indians building their own cattle processing facility. Talk about varied revenue streams.
Mm-hmm.
Porch Creek Indians have been certainly diversifying their investments. Everything from, of course, the casinos, which bring in the money, to cattle processing, OWA down there with the water park and everything.
Yep.
So some interesting stuff going on there. But yeah, the poultry farms, beef farms, and then also how they classify organic or green. Green farming, or there's just so many different loopholes that are being used
help me out with that. So when I'm in the grocery store and things are expensive enough, especially beef products right now, pork's not so expensive, I've noticed. So I'm eating more pork. So if I suddenly start squealing on the air, Dalton's, he's not tickling me. I'm just, when it says organic, or when it says, I think in Publix they call it Greenwise.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Well, I don't know the specifics. I was just listening in on this conversation, and I wish I could recall where it was. But, you know, with lobbyists and these big corporations like you were talking about there with the poultry farms, they've just been able to kind of work the system so that when the average buyer goes in, and I'm not one of these people that's looking for organic everything, mm-hmm. you know, I'll pretty much eat whatever. But when you think you're buying organic,
right.
or what do they call it, free range,
mm-hmm.
That you picture a cow or a chicken in your mind that's loose, walking the earth, eating normal grass,
wearing sunglasses, just the most casual cow ever.
Exactly. And that's just not what's happening. Yeah. So, you know, they're using these loopholes and basically saying that they are something that they aren't necessarily, which isn't new for these huge companies
false
that sell things.
Yeah.
And it's something that they've got to get a rein on. And it's certainly not a top priority, obviously, for people right now. But whether it's a lot of these pharmaceutical companies that I don't know if you watched any of Tucker Carlson on Monday night about this new study that came out about SSRIs and how little they actually, according to this one study, how little they're actually helping solve the depression problem in America, and similar things with Alzheimer's drugs that claim to do stuff that they really haven't been able to prove
mm-hmm.
that they do. Kind of same thing with a lot of our food that works its way through the FDA, that it claims something on the wrapper that it might not necessarily be, right?
Feel free, by the way, to text us, 251-343-0106. Also, that your phone line's wide open.
Yeah, and with school starting back here locally over these next 2 weeks, we've talked a lot this summer about teachers not being available to teach in Alabama schools and how many have left that profession in our state these last couple of years. Florida is dealing with a similar problem, but they're going about solving that problem in a different way than we are here in Alabama.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that and also the average teacher pay by school system across the state. Some interesting numbers here, what the average teacher in each school district gets paid. We'll lay some of that out for you.
And most of the country unaware of this, that would look at, consider Florida schools, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, you know, the cities in Florida and all the very populated beaches. But Florida's got the same problem we do here in Alabama, right, as far as the rural school districts.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's parts of Florida that might as well be South Georgia or South Alabama, and they're just miles away.
Yeah.
I think most of the country would not realize that Florida would have those same sort of problems. So I'm interested to see exactly how they're trying to attack it.
Yeah, some interesting stuff here. It almost seems like another follow the leader. We saw so many states, including our own, kind of follow Ron DeSantis through the pandemic and do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a similar situation coming with the teacher crisis.
Well, it was a month behind, right?
That's right.
17 after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and Mobile Mornings, and we appreciate you listening. And again, you want to call, you want to be part of the show, 251-343-0106. Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, 822, FM Talk 106.5, 251-343-0106. That's our text line. Or if you want to call us, do that too. Just a heads up, if you're going to be cruising out of Mobile, and you're going to, you know, one of your ports is Cancun, don't take a firearm with you. A Tennessee police officer is currently jailed in Mexico, in Cancun. Authorities reportedly found a pistol in his luggage. So he was just cruising, and I don't know if he wasn't aware of this. Lamandris Halls is an officer with the Metropolitan Nashville Police Department. He was arrested at the Cancun Airport. Okay, so he flew down there. On July 9th, his department said that Halls declared the personally owned firearm with the airline, but Mexican law still prohibits bringing guns into the country. He is in jail.
Wow.
That's... I think we had a case of this as well last October. A guy from Arizona was sentenced to nearly 3 years after he and his family drove into Mexico. He had a gun in the car he didn't realize was in there. So, just a heads up.
Mexico takes their firearm safety very seriously. Yeah. They want to make sure that there aren't any firearm deaths happening in Mexico.
Yeah.
Only the Obama administration is allowed to send guns to Mexico. If you're a trained police officer and you declare your weapon, you're still not allowed to take the pistol down there.
But maybe he didn't know, but man, oh man. I mean, the law, he declared it and then he flew, but I don't know why someone at the airport didn't say, hey, by the way, man.
It's
a no go.
I guess it's one thing if you're going to stay in resort areas in Mexico that maybe you don't need a weapon. But if you're traveling into Mexico proper, you know, any other part of Mexico, and you don't have some form of self-defense, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That is absolutely insane with the crime that goes on down there.
Got it.
Ben posted on Twitter, I want to remind folks here, that the Grand Hotel Resort is holding a veteran hiring day today, a hiring event for veterans on National Hire a Veteran Day. The Grand Hotel today from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the Lagoon Room. They also have a link, and we'll try to get this up on our social media here, a link for more information on these opportunities that will take you to the website. It's a long URL and very, very difficult. So we'll try to link that through so you can go to it easily. But National Hire a Veteran Day, the Grand Hotel hosting a hiring event today from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And appreciate Ben reaching out with that. And yes.
Ashley, this would be anything. This would be anything but free rein animals.
Right. Free range.
Free range animals. Ashley from Loosedale just texted. She said, I just got back from a Farm Bureau convention. China is currently building 21-story pig houses. 21 stories.
Wow.
Houses to hold 2 million pigs.
Golly.
So that will not be pork. That is free range.
And are you talking about, Ashley, China building those here, which I can imagine.
Know.
Yeah.
Let us know, Ashley, but thanks for the
who
text.
Knows what the pork situation's like in the actual, you know, mainland China, but they own so much agriculture here. We were talking yesterday, at least 1 million acres at this point that China's bought around America and play a major role in farming, too. So I mentioned the schooling. And, Ashley says those houses are being built in China. The pig condos,
yeah.
I guess, they're putting out there. So school starting here over these next couple of weeks. I know in Mobile County Public Schools get started actually next Thursday, so a week from tomorrow. The Catholic schools around, I think, start in about 3 weeks from this week, 3 weeks from today, right around August 17th. Looks like St. Paul's starts the 15th, so that would be that Monday. Cottage Hill, and the Cottage Hill starts a week from, or 2 weeks from today. Faith Academy starts a week from yesterday. Anyway, it's all varied, but school is definitely starting in Mobile and Baldwin counties these next few weeks. And over the summer, there's been a lot of talk about the hiring crisis for bringing teachers into the state. A lot have retired over these last couple of years. Mm-hmm. That led to the Alabama legislature putting in a teacher pay raise for, I believe, this year, anywhere from 4% to 21% pay raise. That kicks in October 1st, and the how steep your pay raise may be depends on how many years you've been working as a teacher and also what type of degree you graduated with. And at 1819 News, they've pulled together the average salary by school district for what teachers are getting paid around the state, and the highest in the state, probably not much of a surprise, but Mountain Brook City Schools have the highest average teacher salary at $63,095 annually for Mountain Brook Schools. Also, that's obviously a more well-to-do town in the state. It looks like the lowest in the state. I'm not sure where Life Academy looks like. Maybe it's its own kind of thing. I need to figure out where exactly Life Academy is, but that's average pay of $39,410 per year.
Now, these are all public schools?
Life Academy, it doesn't look like it is, but I think maybe the lowest city school system for pay is Ozark City Schools, $50,000 annually. Dallas County, not much higher than Ozark City Schools. Locally, Chickasaw is probably the lowest. $51,647 annually for teachers.
That's a fairly new school district, too, in the last 10
years. That's a good point. Yeah, it's not that old. Looks like Choctaw County, a little further away, $52,000. Escambia County, $52,422 per year. That puts them in the lower third percentile for teacher pay across the state. Saraland City Schools, which around here, maybe performing the best for school systems, public school systems.
I put my money on that.
They are at $53,039 per year average salary for teachers. You go up a little bit further, and Mobile County is not much higher than Saraland City. Mobile County Schools, $53,527 per year is the average. And I was surprised to find Baldwin County Schools $3,000 more per year per teacher, at right around $56,000 annually for teachers that work in Baldwin County's public school systems. I believe Gulf Shores is quite a bit higher even than that, $57,000.
Yeah, they're now they in Orange Beach now, their own school systems.
Yeah, $57,710 per year for Gulf Shores City School teachers, and that puts them in the top 10. Maybe top 15 of the public school systems across the state as far as teacher pay is concerned. So some really interesting numbers there. And Florida, I talked about hiring veterans. They're tying that into their school teacher shortage and trying to get more veterans on the job in schools. And we'll compare that to what Alabama's doing when we get back.
That's a DeSantis thing out of the governor's office?
I believe so, yeah.
All right, let's talk about that. 830 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, he's going to Paw Patrol Live tonight. So everybody in the Orwood family just about out of their minds over that.
Very excited. 834 FM Talk 106.5's Mobile Mornings. Now it's time to talk with Tommy Davis from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Tommy.
Good morning.
Man, a
beautiful day out there today, and if you're looking for a vehicle, we have it at McConnell. I've got the new little Broncos. If you want the two-door, you want the four-door, you want the small one, if you want the 22 Tahoes, Yukons, I got them. If you want diesel trucks, we have them. Certified pre-owned cars, we have them. We have Lincolns, we have Lexus, we have Mercedes. We've also got a Tesla S sitting on the ground. All these cars are here for immediate delivery.
That's some good stuff, Tommy. When you say certified, what exactly does that entail?
Well, the certified pre-owned car gives you a lockout service for 60, 72 months. If you run out of gas, you have a flat tire, you need a jump off, they come take care of it. It also gives you a little better warranty, gives you a little better interest rate. It's actually a better warranty than buying a brand new car.
That's a huge deal. Where can folks find you or get in touch?
You can get in touch with us at 251-476-4141 or at www.mcconnellautomotive.com.
All right. Appreciate it, Tommy.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day. Come see us last weekend of the month.
That's right. It is the last weekend of the month. July flew right on by. That's Tommy Davis. You'll find him at McConnell on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, mcconnellautomotive.com.
836 with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orrig, FM Talk 106.5. So we're talking about the Florida plan.
Yeah.
Florida in, well, you know, in some areas of the state, in the same boat as Alabama, just tough to find the teachers to take these jobs in certain rural schools districts. And I guess that's what we're talking about here.
Exactly. And I'm kind of, you know, comparing this to the pandemic and more so, you know, how states reacted to the pandemic. And
we've got more on that on the way, too, by the way.
And Governor Ivey, you know, kind of followed the lead of the state health officer, Dr. Scott Harris. Basically, what he said went, and kind of a different tact than Florida took. DeSantis really kind of led the charge there and went about the pandemic in an entirely different way than so many other states did, and really went about it the way that many conservatives were saying that we should react as far as keeping businesses open and trying to keep the economy afloat during those 2 years. And Ivy seemed to just kind of be following the leader throughout a lot of it, if she did even follow him at all. And now as we deal with teacher shortages, Florida is going about repairing their system in a different way than we are. First, you know, I was talking about this average annual salary by school district. A texter texted in, asked, was the $57,000 a year for Gulf Shores schools beginning teacher salary? This texter says, a long time ago, around the 1960, I was a beginning teacher in Mississippi, which was admittedly probably the lowest paid position in the country for a beginning teacher. My pay was $3,000 over 10 months. So that was the beginning pay for a teacher in Mississippi back in 1960.
Wow.
The $57,000 I referenced there for Gulf Shore City Schools, that's the average teacher salary. So you take your highest paid teachers, take your lowest paid teachers, and you average all that together.
All those numbers were average, right?
Right.
Okay.
And so even, you know, Gulf Shore Schools, which are near the top of the list, still a good $7,000 behind Mountain Brook City Schools, which have the highest average teacher salary. But the Gulf Shore School is way ahead of Mobile County and the Saraland City Schools. Kind of interesting how all of that plays out. And a big reason is that different districts provide different amounts of public funding to their school systems. Regardless, as you said, the rural schools are the ones having the most issues.
Sure.
Bringing teachers who graduate back to these small towns and having them teach, because so many youth, so many young adults are moving to the bigger cities and leaving their towns high and dry, kind of like we were talking about with Grove Hill, where I grew up, and some right. of these other places.
I can imagine, yeah.
So with Alabama, what they decided to do to solve the teacher problem was, well, increase teacher pay. They're giving bonuses anywhere from 4 to 21%. That kicks in August. But also something that's a little more contentious, and that is lowering the standards for teachers that take this praxis test.
Right.
And this goes into effect immediately. Just a couple weeks ago, the Alabama State Board of Education approved changes to the teacher testing requirement and requirements. And one of the ways is this praxis test. They said currently teachers must pass the praxis teacher test in their subject area, have a GPA in their subject area of 2.5. So you would, you know, if you're going to have someone who's going to go on to teach history, you would want them to at least have a 2.5 GPA. I'd say higher
in that subject.
In history,
yeah, that'd be the low end for sure. I mean, you would want them to have a higher GPA.
2.5 seems a bit low,
yeah,
right?
You're just earning in the middle of the class. You kind of don't care one way or the other. Now you're going to get up and teach that subject for years to kids.
A bit on the fence for that one.
Yeah.
Also, they have to pass the Ed TPA assessment, which measures teaching skills in order to obtain the certificate. But they did lower the GPA was lowered to 2.70 from 2.75, I guess, to 2.5. And then this Praxis test, they lowered that score. In Florida, on the other hand, they just passed this here recently, the Florida Education Association. They say they have more than 9,000 vacancies statewide. 4,300 of those are teaching jobs. 5,200 are non-teaching but essential jobs within the school system. And they've announced that military veterans, along with their spouses, can receive five-year vouchers to allow them to teach in the classroom without a teacher's degree.
Oh.
This is tied to $8.6 million that Florida announced would be used to expand career and workforce training opportunities for military veterans and their spouses. The president of the Alachua County Education Association, Carmen Ward, is a member of the Florida Education Association, said that this move is a way to devalue the teaching profession. So they have kind of the same argument going on over there, that they're lowering standards,
right,
and that it'll be the students that pay for it. The difference is Florida's trying to get veterans involved, and Alabama are keeping, you know, people who want to be teachers, but just lowering the standards for them. Ward said, "We're always fighting to lift our profession up. We have a lot of veterans that work currently in our schools. However, they have four-year degrees. Because it's an academic position, it requires that the person who's teaching the subject matter have academic experience with that subject matter." So she's kind of against this. But the Florida Department of Education says, here's who's eligible to apply for these teaching and non-teaching jobs. Active duty service members of the armed forces or reserve units, the spouses of active duty service members, veterans who were honorably discharged or retired from service as members of the U.S. Armed Forces or reserve units, also their spouses, and the surviving spouses of veterans or service members who died while on active duty. So a weird way to kind of try to fix this problem.
Yeah.
But a two birds, one stone thing here. They're trying to take veterans who are having trouble finding work or for one reason or the other.
Plug in that hole.
Want to get into the teaching profession.
Yeah.
And maybe use them for the teachers that left.
Yeah, that's unusual. And so they do have 4-year degrees. Any of these veterans are college graduates. So.
I believe that's the standard for sure.
You got to be there, right? Speaking of veterans, how about this, Dalton? Let's see if I got this right here. Yeah. So Republican lawmakers, we talked about some of those active duty, you know, like the reservists and things like that. So Republican lawmakers calling on Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to rescind a policy that has cut pay and benefits for nearly 60,000 Guard and Reserve troops because...
Vaccines.
There you go.
Or no vaccines.
No vaccine. The troops have also been barred from training exercises while the Pentagon weighs whether to boot them from the force. I understand law and order, discipline. You tell the platoon to charge the machine gun. They've got to do it. This is Representative Mike Waltz, who is a former Green Beret, but he's a Republican House member in Florida. But also, as leaders, we have to evaluate our orders and whether it's worth the risk. And in this case, you have a vaccine that has now been shown not to stop the spread. The Pentagon argues that the COVID vaccine, which is now fully approved by the FDA, is just one of more than a dozen vaccines that service members are required to get, which are largely uncontroversial. So service members, they're not just vaccinated with the COVID-19 like all of us and, you know, my body, my choice, whatever, but they've got to get, I remember, you know, we didn't talk about it much, but I'm sure the places that Zach went on his missions, you were vaccinated for your own health, considering, I guess, the diseases in those countries.
Yeah.
Somalia, Afghanistan, Syria, some of the places that he did some of his greatest hits.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any choice.
Yeah, it's been like that for decades,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you're in the service, people who fought, I'm sure, even World War II, I don't know how many vaccines they had back then. Well, we know at least the polio at that time. World War II, Vietnam, Desert Storm, and then Afghanistan and Iraq, people that served have all gone kind of through that line where they get all the vaccinations, I guess, at one time, is some of the stories I've heard. So I thought it was kind of a different story with service members than your standard U.S. citizen. I could understand, you know, service members having to go get the vaccine, mm-hmm. as ridiculous as some of it sounded. And I felt differently and still do about that than I do your average American who hasn't, you know, hasn't sworn an oath to the country to serve.
Right.
But what are they doing? Because they can't recruit right now. They're having so much difficulty keeping people in the services that to punish 60,000 that didn't get the vaccine, it just seems like a bad business move.
It's absolutely not a good business move at all. And again, listen to the words of Walz, who is the congressman in the state of Florida. I guess he's a Florida representative. He says, an order is an order. We're used to being disciplined. We get it. That's what we do. But it also, as leaders, we have to evaluate our orders and whether it's worth the risk. And in this case, you have a vaccine that has now been shown not to stop the spread.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fact. So, the virus seems to be everywhere right now. You've got cities on the West Coast now and counties considering mask mandates all over again.
Yeah.
So that shows you that despite and the West Coast certainly was much more compliant in getting the vaccine, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you have a citizen base that more of them are vaccinated, and yet things are so out of control with COVID. Now, is it as much of a medical concern? But the COVID numbers are up, and so they're considering the mask mandate yet again in places like Los Angeles County and also up King County in Seattle.
Yeah, some of that's just so ridiculous. Even more ridiculous are, I think, the places that are requiring the children to get vaccinated in order to go to the schools there. That is one that I just can't get past, some of those. But how about the Alabama Department of Public Health on social media?
Talk about that, what they did, because that just
they
like hit people in the side of the head.
Like, they were trying to normalize masking, they said. Mask up, because COVID is on the rise again. And that flies completely in the face of, well, the feelings of most Alabamians.
Yeah.
And Governor Ivey had to come out and immediately rebut that. I saw Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth didn't like that they posted that. But, again, they're kind of their own thing there with Dr. Scott Harris and the rest of the Health Association.
848 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton will be joined by Jeff Poor, talk about his guest lineup. It's Wednesday, right?
That is.
I'm having a
Paw Patrol night.
Failing moment. Yeah, Paw Patrol. Hump Day. Pretty exciting. Dalton FM Talk 106.5 is 8:53 on Mobile Mornings. Jeff Poor is on the way. Jeff Poor Show. State Rep Steve Klaus will be a guest. Also, Trustful Tribune's Scott Buttram. Former State Rep Rusty Glover, local favorite. And Sean Ross with Sean Ross Communications and the Katie Britt for U.S. Senate campaign.
All right. Looking forward to that. Also, talking with Jeff here in just a second. Sean Sullivan, who comes on after Jeff, wanted me to let folks know that he's got this guy. I might not be saying his name correctly. I don't know. Ted Nugent? Nugent? The Nuge. He's coming on midday at 12:30 today to talk with Sean. I guess he has a show coming up this weekend here in Mobile. And that's somebody that Jeff has also interviewed, Ted Nugent. That was actually for political purposes as well, Jeff. I wonder what the Nuge thinks about his endorsement now, a few months later.
Well, it didn't really work out, did it? Twice. So I don't know. He's an interesting character, though, right?
Yeah, I'd like to normalize celebrities endorsing. Any kind of celebrity, whether it's Ted Nugent or a Jonas brother or Leonardo DiCaprio, I want to hear celebrities endorse more politicians in states that they don't really have anything to do with, except
well,
maybe visiting every now and then.
I tell you what, I do like that we do have I like the quality of celebrity we have on the right here. Ted Nugent, John Voight, who else? I don't know. Joe Piscopo. it's such a deep, deep bench.
Yeah. Old Piscopo. He's not even allowed at current Saturday Night Live shootings. He can't even come by.
It'll be interesting to see how all the different endorsements start to shake out for 2024 on the Republican side. Kind of, I guess, back-to-back speeches in D.C., with former President Trump and former VP Mike Pence both returning to D.C. this week. Pence, I was wondering what his strategy would be. And it sounds like he's kind of going the route where he says, yeah, Trump and I did a lot of things together, a lot of great things. We're on the same page on a lot, but we differ in our view of the future of the Republican Party. And saying all that without really trashing Trump. And you wonder if he's holding that back until further into the campaign, or exactly what Pence's strategy would be if he really wants to be president.
Well, I do think if he wants to be president, he has to differentiate himself from Trump, right? And this may be the beginning of that. But you don't want to go, you don't want to go full bore anti-Trump. But you got to say, well, maybe look at me. I am Trump without being Trump, right? I was his vice president. I'd be more Trumpy than that. And I won't be on Twitter at 3 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's basically exactly what he did, right, Dalton? I mean, we agree on so much, but I'm not him.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what his path would be, and so many others.
Trump dropping out.
Well, that's about it, right? Yeah. I know there's other reasons to run for office. We've discussed them plenty of times with Jeff, whether it's just notoriety or kind of the first step towards maybe winning office down the road. But with Pence, Pompeo, some of these that were in the Trump administration, I really don't see the path for them, and I don't understand it.
Let's think about this, though. Do you think Iowa, for example, Iowa, New Hampshire, let's just think about those two first battleground states. I could see Pence winning Iowa. Hmm. I mean, Ted Cruz won it in the past against Trump. And I think you get an Iowa caucus, and who knows what New Hampshire's going to do. And then what? South Carolina, maybe that goes for Trump. And then you start thinking about it, and you put the map together. And the way we do presidential primaries in this country, they're probably theoretically you could make up a path for any of these guys.
You think people will continue to be canceled for any pro-Trump views? We're so divided that I can't even really picture right now what 2023 is going to look like once people start picking sides again. It's going to be, you know, same thing we've seen the last 8 years, I guess.
It is. Like, 2015, 2016 was tough for Republicans because we were all just fighting amongst ourselves. It's different this time. You got to think Trump's the prohibitive front runner. And he has more of a base within the Republican Party. However, you know, you take Republican out of it and you look at general election, does he really inspire the masses as he did in 2016 again?
All right, Jeff, I know you'll have more on that, more on some state issues as well. And Jeff Porcio's on the way, so we look forward to that. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having me on.
There you go. Jeff Poor, the Jeff Poor Show on the way. Midday Mobile at noon today. Again, Ted Nugent on at 12:30. And we'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, Mobile Mornings.